And then he said, don't wish it was easier. Wish you were better. Don't wish for less problems. Wish for more skills.
I can't catch a break, guys.
Yeah.
Get them the fuck away from me. I can't be around those guys.
People think, oh, well, cleaning your room, that's just a cliche. It's like, yeah, really, eh? Just go ahead and try it.
If people had any idea how powerful sleep is for healing from anything, and the fact that it's free.
My mind is absolutely bulletproof, solid as a rock.
Podcast.
A couple of things we're going to be talking about today is, one, the importance of protein. A few questions that have come up in the gym. Creatine, the importance of micros or your micronutrients. We're going to be talking about carbs and their role in the body. And we're also going to touch on a little bit of fast. Intermittent fasting is a very popular topic. How's it going, Shane?
Hey, buddy. How's it going? Not too bad at all, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, good. Good to see you.
Yeah, you too. I've just put a cup of tea down somewhere and I'm just hunting for it. So I've absolutely no idea where I've bloody left it. Yeah, I found it. Yeah, I usually end up playing hide and seek throughout the week, my cup of tea and losing. So, how are you? Are you all good?
How's your morning been, Tim?
Say that again, sorry.
How's your morning been? I see you're getting into a good habit with a morning routine, getting your walk in, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, definitely, 100%. So, I'm up at 5:45 generally. 6 o'clock down the canal, they've got access to a beautiful little walk, basically. And yeah, just take the dog down there for an hour's walk every morning, and it's just made a huge difference. You know, mentally and focus wise, energy levels and all that sort of thing. So yeah, it's tricky to do something, integrate something like that initially when you're not used to getting up at that time and things like that. But you know, for probably a good solid month now, you know, I've been implementing that and staying, you know, 90% consistent with it. So it's been a huge difference. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I'm a huge believer in a good morning routine and kind of building momentum for your day. It's good. Very, very 100%. Important work. So a couple things we recommend is obviously hydration in the morning, a little bit of meditation, some exercise, some gratitude if you can squeeze it in. I use a gratitude 100%. Journal.
Yeah, definitely. So I've got, I think it's called Best Self, the journal that I use. I do the exact same thing, and literally as part of the every single day on that sheet, you know, it's obviously, you know, you've got your calendar or diary or whatever you want to call it, and you can just block out the times that you're going to spend on X, Y, and Z. Little notes section, and then it says, you know, I'm sure it says, what are you grateful for, or something along those lines in the morning. And, you know, it almost sounds like cheesy or something, doesn't it?
Yeah, like, it sounds cheesy or super cringe. I'll give the guys here a look of mine. If anybody's interested, I can post a link below. This is kind of basically what it looks like. Again, a super, super useful habit. Gratitude, I find, is such an important thing, again, just for general happiness, and just realizing that no matter how bad your day is, that we are the 1%. You know, even if you're one of the poorest people in Ireland or England, you're still in the 1%, and we still have so much to be grateful for. So just kind of condition yourself to look for the positive things rather than, that's easy to be absorbed by the negative things. This is kind of what my gratitude journal looks like. So basically starts off with a nice little quote at the top. Three things you're grateful for. Three things that would make the day great. You pop in a little daily affirmation. Or a positive I am statement, and then you finish the day, three great things that happened today, and then how could I make today even better? I'm really good in the morning. Well, I'm pretty good in the morning. I usually slack off in the evening, so that's kind of something I'm working on.
Yeah, I forget every time in the evening.
So if anybody interested, the 5-minute journalist one I use, or your one is what, the Best Self? I think Lauren Meehan might have.
Yeah, I've just got one off the shelf in the room, so it's completely plain. It's got like a little yellow bookmark thing, but. On the inside, so that's, this is what, hold on a second, is that okay there? I don't know,
yeah,
it'll be back to front, I suppose. So basically, you know, on the left hand side there, you've got like the, you know, the setting your day out, and then in the morning I'm grateful for ... and you write down three things that you're grateful for, and then top right is my goals, today's targets as well, three targets today that are working closer to that goal. lessons, and then the evening, I'm the exact same as you. Completely forget everything every time. But let's say, in theory, we were perfect and doing it really well. It says lessons learned. What are your wins? You know, what's gone really well for you today? And then again, just before you go to bed, you know, what am I grateful for again? So you're starting and finishing the day in like a positive mindset, really. And it's funny because obviously it was Father's Day yesterday, and I met up with my family, and we were having this discussion in a slightly separate topic, but it's just so important to have positive thinking at all times. I know that it's physically impossible to just be positive all the time, but what we can do is, you know, if we don't focus on it at all, your brain's designed to focus on negativity, and your brain's essentially designed to keep us alive and be aware of anything that could go wrong and things like that, and that's fine. But nowadays we don't have to worry if, like, a grizzly bear's going to come and, you know, like, eat you in your from your cave or something, you know. But our brains are still wired that way, and it just doesn't really work in modern day. So, you know, to sort of be mindful and actually actively try and override that and sort of be positive at all times is just incredibly important, in my opinion. Otherwise your brain will run away with it, basically, and, you know, you start focusing on negative things all the time, and literally you've got a million things to be grateful for, like, you know, like, even just being on this phone now, like, you know, all the things we have just to be able to get on this call, and we've got it, like, you know, like, just the internet and stuff, and, you know, some people literally don't even have that.
Chair, a cup of coffee, you know, in clothes on our back, you know, and it's kind of, once you kind of get in the habit of doing it, it's like, it's almost hard to not always look for the silver lining.
Yeah, and this is the thing, so, you know, people like you and I, relentless with this. You know, if something goes bad, you know, on a particular day, something goes wrong and you're not very happy about it, I always try and flip that into a positive in some way, shape or form. You know, so let's say, for example, I don't know, I'll give you a perfect example, actually. So about 3 weeks ago, I went into a bar. It was like a new bar opened in the town where I live, and I met one of my friends I've not seen in ages. And we only had two drinks, and I paid for them on my card. And then I looked at my bank account, and it said that it charged me 75 quid for two drinks, basically. Mm-hmm. So, stupid as it sounds, again, this is like probably a rubbish example, but I went back. No, don't get me wrong, I got my refund and everything, it was all sorted. But the thing is, because that happened, it will never happen to me again, because I check every single time now when I put my thing on the contactless thing. So from this point onwards, it's a good thing that happened. Exactly. What's the lesson you've learned from that, and what you're going to do different going forward to make sure it doesn't happen again? And that's it. You know, again, like I said, probably a bit of a shoddy example, but you understand the principle that, you know, that's attached to that, I suppose.
Yeah, no, 100%. Even for myself, like another example of my kind of my life would be like, because obviously my story is like, at one point I was 50 pounds overweight, kind of lost all the weight, got in the back in the box and all that kind of stuff. But if I didn't have that at the time, being overweight and stuff, you know, kind of was making me depressed, that was kind of really impacting my life in that way. But if I didn't go through that, I wouldn't have the empathy for people who are overweight now, versus somebody who's been lean and fit their whole lives, just can't relate to people the same way that I can. So it's like the things that you're going through, maybe, whether it be depression, anxiety, if you can overcome that, you know, you'll be such an empathetic voice for people, and you'll be able to have such a good set of ears, such a good set of finely tuned ears to listen to people and understand where they're coming from.
I literally couldn't agree more. I really couldn't. And again, you know, it doesn't matter what the scenario was, you know, what difficulty it was. So, you know, one of the biggest examples that I have for me personally is, you know, I haven't been in the same situation as you, but, you know, going through one of the single most difficult physical challenges I've ever done in my whole life was just over a year ago, almost to the week. And I did a trail marathon. So I've run a marathon before, and it's difficult enough just training for that. Like, it's a bloody slug, you know. But this was because I'd already done a marathon, I thought, how do I do something that's even more difficult than that? So I did a trail marathon, which is essentially in the Peak District. And literally it's mountains the whole way, like literally like 45 degree then and down like shale like paths and stuff. Like, I can't describe to you how mentally challenging that, especially the last 3 or 4 miles, because I was sat there thinking, you know, if I passed out now, literally there's not even anywhere for like an ambulance to an air ambulance to land, because we're on the side of a mountain like that, right? All these thoughts are going through my head. Now, what I would say is, now that I've gone through that and pushed myself to that absolute mental threshold that I'm capable of, anything else that happens in life now, I always think back and think, you know, how much I had to go through to cross the finish line on that day. Anything else that happens in life now is just like, I can handle this. It's not an issue.
Yeah.
To get where I'm coming from. So,
yeah,
of course, if you'd have asked me at the time when I was going through it, you don't have the ability to see the value of that.
Running, in my opinion, is probably one of the best ways to develop mental toughness.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you leave the door, it's like running is not easy. It's like people always ask, like, when does it get easy? It's like it doesn't. It never gets easy because you just start running fast. All these stories start to come up, like, oh, should I stop? Or, oh, I have a bit of a creak in my knee. Or, oh, it's a little bit cold. Maybe I forgot my headphones. I have no jacket or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And before you know, but you're constantly overcoming these kind of negative thoughts that come up. And that's why exercise, I feel like, is such a useful tool for helping people overcome maybe some mental health issues or developing that maybe mental toughness.
Without a doubt. It's funny you should say that, you know, the excuses that you make, because you know, I had it, you know, on you forgot your headphones thing. Yeah. I know it sounds trivial, but like, so the weekends I did my long runs basically, and that's when you know the mileage increases, and essentially, you know, the run that I did on a Saturday was the run that, you know, gets you the distance and the mileage in basically. And I can remember, like, as my mileage increased, and because I was doing sort of, you know, hill training the whole time, it took a lot longer than the first marathon, as in total time wise. So what ended up happening was I'd get to about 4 hours and my wireless headphones ran out of battery.
No.
So I had no music for the last hour and a half of the training set, because I was literally running for about 5 hours, 5.5 hours. So, you know, mentally it distracts me, and it, you know, those first 4 hours just went like that, and it was difficult, but it was okay because that you had some, you know, your own playlist on or whatever.
And then
after an hour, and then the last hour, which is the most bloody difficult time, the end of the you know, when you're at that you're most tired and the weakest, you've got to listen to your own thoughts the whole time, and I was absolutely fuming that these bloody headphones ran out after four and a half hours. But the next week you start thinking, oh, I don't want to do it. Maybe I should get new headphones. I'll wait until my new headphones come and then I'll start picking back up again. You can't do that. You've just got to keep plowing through, and that's it. That's life. Nothing's perfect. You know?
Yeah. And even on that, I feel like it is important as well that people get used to being alone with their own thoughts. I feel like that's one of the kind of biggest obstacles to meditation as well for a lot of people, which again, kind of got back to my meditation this morning really, and just feeling I'm buzzing. It's kind of one of these things, like, why did I ever stop it? But don't like to be left alone with their own thoughts. And I feel like the things that come up in that time are things that you just need to deal with. You need to confront these things, or you need to sort these things out in your own head. So, and I find going for a run could be a beautiful time to do that.
Definitely, you know, there's so many different forms as well. So I've got an app on my phone called calm.com. And there's loads and loads of different types. That's not the right one or anything like that, but I've used that many a time in the past. Thing I should probably do a lot more meditation in fairness, because you know, I do just feel so mentally fresh and like with lots of clarity. I don't know, you know, I don't know if there is a perfect word to describe it, but you know, that's what I experience when that happens. When, you know, if I'm stressed or something, then therefore I go to it. So it's like a solution giver.
It's like a
whereas
doll,
I should
exactly.
really be maintaining it. Yeah.
Exactly. It's kind of, what does it say? Prehab is always much more effective than rehab. If we guard ourselves against these things, but just as you said, you said mentally refreshed, and it just resonated with me. An example I heard about meditation before. It's almost like, so when you're on your computer and you've got all the windows open and the RAM is having to run at, you know, high speed. It's like meditation. It allows you to kind of close all them windows off, and you kind of, it's like starting the computer from fresh almost. You get the kind of all that backlog of information that's filling up your mind. You kind of can just push that. They're not necessarily pushing. You deal with it and send it where it's supposed to go.
Yeah, definitely. And if you think about it as well, you know, when it comes to just day to day, you know, mentally, it's almost like you're on a treadmill all the time, because your brain never stops thinking about stuff and trying to work stuff out and thinking of the next thing. And once it's finished thinking about that, it thinks about something else and so on and so forth. And obviously we need to do that. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but the problem is we can go like weeks and months and maybe even years, maybe potentially even decades without having a time for your brain to actually stop and completely switch off. So when, you know, when you meditate and things, it's actually incredibly difficult to not think about anything. If that's your form of meditation, you know, there's lots of different types, of course, but you know, a lot of people say that, you know, just try and think of nothing. And then, after literally 13 seconds, you start thinking about, oh, I wonder if Liverpool's going to put the same team out next year when they reach the Champions League final. Stop thinking about it. Go back. Start again. Stop thinking. And then you think about nothing. And then 10 seconds later, something else creeps in. And it's really difficult to not think about anything at all. Very, very difficult. But once you do that, it's literally, that's the period of time your brain gets to completely and utterly rest and not have to be on the treadmill all the time. And I think it's really valuable. And there's loads of, I'm not 100% familiar with it, by the way, by no means, but there is actually lots of research about, you know, the benefits of meditation, literally from a scientific point of view. It's not just something that, you know,
some kind of weird Buddhist,
Buddhist monks in the foothills in the Himalayas or something or whatever, like sitting on a mat and meditating and levitating and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yes, it is for them, but it's for everybody. And, you know, and it's free and it's easy. You don't need you don't need anything for it. And it's like, well, therefore it's easily accessible for everybody as well.
And not only that, but I find these are the things like the fact that it's free is one of the reasons why almost people discount it. It's free. It's too simple. Just sit and relax, sit and breathe. You know, people want a more convoluted, more complicated answer. I'm sure it's the same in your field with nutrition. You know what I mean? It couldn't be that simple.
I get asked all the time things like, you know, Shane, what's the best like brand of protein powder and amounts and timing for muscle recovery, and you know, the problem is they haven't taken a look at the back to basics post that I posted in the group, let's say, you know, 2 weeks ago or whatever. Said, here's how you work out the correct amount of protein. And we say, brilliant. So just before I answer that question, how much protein are you consuming right now? And they're like, I don't know. So, okay, so do you know your targets? Have you taken a look at the post? No, I haven't. No. Right, okay. So before we even start having a chat about brands and leucine thresholds and timing and you know, you don't need to do any of that until you start getting the amounts right. You know, the simple stuff is the easiest stuff not to get right as well, because you think it's therefore too simple. It's, you know, it's one of those things. We have to maintain the simple stuff and build on that. You know, it's like trying to build a house and like some fancy windows, and you've not even got like the foundations of the house sorted. So it's not going to work. It doesn't matter how fancy the windows are that you're going to put in. You need to get the foundations right.
Someone like to say to people is supplements should never be a replacement for foods. It's in the word supplement. It should add to your diet. Yeah. It should never take something take something else away. And again, whole food is always going to be better than any supplement. But just on, while we're on the topic, Shane, one of the first questions, I think Brandon commented, he was kind of chatting to some clients during the week, and people are talking about the importance of protein and or should they or do they need to take supplements?
Yeah, definitely. So it's annoyingly with everything with nutrition, it's not like a simple yes no answer. It depends. It's always like, well, it depends. You know, that's generally the answer when it comes to nutrition.
Me and the lad actually recorded a podcast yesterday, and that was kind of with the core. I think with the topic of the podcast was what is the best diet or what is good nutrition, and that was like literally the answer to everything. It depends. People always ask me, it's like, is the question I get asked the most is this healthy? And they're like, do you want to ask me about a specific cereal bar or a specific piece of bread or certain type of eggs or chicken, or whatever it is. But it's like, let's stop looking at the food individually and let's take a step back. Well, it depends. What did you eat for the rest of your meals? What did the whole day look like? Or what did your week look like as a whole, rather than being focused in on this one cereal bar?
Minuscule area. I totally agree. And this, you know, one of the things that I try to, you know, get people to hit home on that topic is, you know, there is no such thing as a good or a bad food. You can only have like a good or a bad diet. You know, it's like building a whole wall that's got 6,000 bricks in it. And you're focusing on one brick and saying, is this brick like good enough to withstand this, to keep the wall in keeping or whatever? It's like, well, no, you have to look at the wall as a whole, not like focus on one brick, you know. So you know, when it comes to, you know, protein and things like that, we need to understand, like, first and foremost, what's happening with the whole of your diet over the course of a week. Are you getting the correct amounts already? Yeah. Supplements are really, really handy, really useful. So, for example, with me, I actually have protein shakes as a part of the snack section of my diet in particular. So I use it as just like a, you know, I don't have to fanny around cooking and things like that. I don't have to mess around. I literally just have to put it in a shaker and it's available. It's done. Yeah. It's obviously incredibly high protein density. You know, it's like 20 to 30 grams per serving. So it's a nice top up towards my protein goals. And also, importantly, it's like less than 100 calories as well. So again, yeah. it doesn't have to be of any significance to anybody else. But for me, what I'm trying to do is just make sure that I don't have to like count every single like nutrition label and things like that. I've just got like a handful of things that I just know every single one of them are a maximum of 100 calories. So mentally I can keep on track with things much easier that way. So for example, you know, okay, so if I have three snacks today from my snack section, it's definitely not going to be higher than 300 calories. I don't have to count it now. I just know. Do you get what I mean? I just know. So when it comes to protein supplementation, it's actually a really good thing in my opinion. So you have something like whey protein, and you know, whey protein is probably one of the most extensively researched sections of nutrition ever, like by a whole mile.
Whey protein and creatine are the top two kind of that have the most solid kind of research behind them.
So, did you say creatine? Sorry.
Yeah,
sorry, it just broke up a little bit there. Yeah, 100%. So, yeah, when it comes to protein supplements and creatine, you're absolutely right. And there's hardly any topics that are even close to the amount of research there's on. So what I'm saying is we know that it works. We know that it's effective. And we know that it's a good, useful tool because, you know, if you try and, like, let's say, for example, even if you think from a cost perspective, you don't have to, by the way. And again, we're zooming in on one area when we shouldn't really. But just to give you an example, if I went to the butchers now and got like a slab of meat, whether it's like rump steak or something or whatever, it's actually per gram of protein going to be relatively high. I'm not saying it's too expensive because of course it's not. And there's lots of benefits to having, you know, meat from the butchers. Just to clarify, I'm not saying don't do this, but I'm just saying, you know, if you compare that to something like whey protein, and it might be like 40 pence a serving or something like that. So, you know, actually, if you're struggling to hit your protein goals, you know, you might not want to add in all these like, you know, more expensive ingredients. You may not want to do that. You may want to literally just get a tub of protein that's got X amount of servings in it, and it's literally 40 pence a serving to get that protein topped up. So happy days. And it's just super easy as well to integrate into your day-to-day. So, you know, if you are at work or something, you know, I dare say the boss would be pretty unhappy with you getting the George Foreman out in the middle of the office, you know, and start grilling some rump steak. You know, it's probably going to annoy a few people. But having said that, you know, if you've got a little protein shaker in your bag, then happy days, you know. You literally just add water and you can carry it.
It's not a problem.
Protein.
It's not a problem unless you leave it. you leave the protein in your shake overnight.
Yeah, oh God almighty, yeah, don't do that.
One of the worst smelling things in the world.
Yeah, agreed. And then you're like, I don't even want to ever use this protein shaker ever again. I just want to buy a new one. You have to clean it for about 24 hours.
Yeah. And then
no problem whatsoever with protein supplementation.
Do you think can you take too much? I kind of obviously, because our goal is to kind of get people to get in good habits with food and kind of, you know, cooking food and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, some people are saying is two shakes too much, is three shakes too much, is four shakes too much?
Yeah. Yeah. So the answer to this is, you know, if we were to, you know, what's the disadvantage or what's the thing that we want to avoid when having too, you know, too many supplements? What do you mean by too many? What's the problem it's going to cause? And when it comes to protein, we literally have to be having, I think it's like, hold on a second, let me just get this right. So per kilogram, sorry, the little man's just in the room getting changed here, so I'm actually nip next door. Like the grams per kilogram of body weight, normally people would have probably just, you know, between sort of 0.8 and 1.2 grams per kilogram of body weight. So just to put that in simple terms, if you weighed 100 grams, on average, you'd be normally consuming probably in and around 100 grams of protein per day. That would be like an absolute base level for you to be achieving. So when it comes to unsafe levels, research has suggested that it's literally four times that amount, and also sustained over a very long period of time. Like, you know, it's incredibly difficult to actually even consume 400 grams per day. You know, yeah, that you'd have to be eating like thousands and thousands of calories and having massively protein dense foods at all times to be able to meet that. So what I'm saying is, one thing I want to sort of myth wise to dispel is you can't over supplement really. You can, it is possible, but it's going to be incredibly difficult, and it would require that much planning and effort to over consume that it in reality, in everybody's day to day lives, it just wouldn't be an issue. Now, having said that, that's for the perspective of health and like, could it be detrimental to your health? Now, one thing I would say is what people often overlook is the fact that we only have, especially if you're on a weight loss journey, we only have a certain amount of calories per day that we have access to that is ring fenced, and you can't really have more than that, otherwise you're not going to lose weight. So let's say, for example, that's 1500 calories. And let's say, for example, you're consuming 100, and my math is going to be terrible here probably, but let's say you're consuming 125 grams per day. That's basically 500 calories sectioned aside for protein from that 1500 calories per day. So what I'm saying is, if you consume more and more protein, there's not necessarily going to be a problem health-wise, but results-wise, actually, you're cutting into other areas of your nutrition like carbohydrate and fats. So let's say, for example, you can only consume like 3 grams of carbohydrates per day now because you're having so much protein from that 1500 calorie budget. Actually, yeah, that is going to cause a problem. So don't get me wrong, it's great that you're consuming all this protein and you know your muscles are going to be recovering, but you're going to feel like crap in your sessions because you've not got enough space left in that allocation for carbohydrates and fats. So, you know, you're going to be sluggish in your sessions. You've got no energy, you know, in your sessions, you're not recovering right, you're not replacing any glycogen stores. So, you know, we've just got to think of it from that perspective as well. You can overconsume if it's cutting into other areas, because any increase anywhere has to therefore leave a reduction somewhere else. Yeah. Do you get what I mean? Because you only have a certain amount of calories to consume. So, you know, that's a really important, you know, thing that people overlook really. So from a health perspective, it's incredibly unlikely that you're ever going to get any problems, so you know, don't worry on that front. Having said that, when it comes to the quality of your sessions, your week, your training, your recovery, we need to have a balance between all those things. You know, we can't just cut out carbs and have a shed load of protein for those very, very reasons. You know, that's going to lead to a detriment in your performance and recovery, energy levels, and you know, we just really do need to try and make sure that you don't have any. It's difficult enough as it is, isn't it, you know, to go through a weight loss journey without having the, you know, perfect excuses where I feel like crap before my training session. It's like, well, you probably just consume a bit too much protein sometimes and maybe not enough carbohydrates. But again, even then, you know, it generally doesn't occur very often that people are having that little carbohydrates and fats and having a huge amount of protein, because you know, you just have to be having like steak and eggs and protein shakes and chicken and minced turkey and you know, chicken sausages and blah, and that's literally your whole, you'd have to have that as your whole diet basically for that to occur. So generally it doesn't happen naturally. But yeah, some people do go, I'm going to up my protein intakes, is that okay? More often than not, it is okay. You know, an extra 20-30 grams a day, cool, there's nothing wrong with that at all. But just remember that is going to take away from somewhere else. So if you're adding another 100 grams per day, for example, for whatever reason, well, actually there's four calories per gram. So that's 400 calories you've got to reduce elsewhere now, because you're adding another 100 calories of protein in. So, you know, all we have to do is just make sure that we've gone through the, there is a protein post. What I'll do is when we finish this live stream, and it takes sometimes a while just to upload to the group, but once it's gone live, what I'll do is I'll actually put a copy and paste a link to one of the posts I put in the group about protein and how to work out the amount of protein that you need. And also, I think I have, I'm 99% sure I have, but if not, I'll post it anyway. But there's like an extensive list of like all animal and plant-based protein sources. So literally from those posts, you can have all of your protein dealt with, taken care of and worked out and sorted. And you can mentally put that to bed. It's taken care of now.
Excellent.
So yeah, I'll put those links in there.
I mean, it's cool. Another question that came in, Brandon, from Brandon, he's having a chat with the clients, was the importance of micronutrients. and the roles that they play in the body. Because, you know, as you said, a lot of people can maybe get a little bit too focused on the macros, macros being the protein, carbs, and the fats. But the micronutrients, the vitamins and minerals, how important is that to take into consideration? I know, because I know in theory there is a... in theory, it can be done. I know there's people who have done kind of self experiments where, like, they, you know, they just eat McDonald's just to prove that, you know, a calorie deficit will work regardless. But kind of the long, what would you think the long term effect of that would be?
Yeah, so, you know, this is the thing. It's a tricky one to get your head around because it doesn't really make any sense at all when I say this. But the fact of the matter is, if you want to lose weight, you have to create the calorie deficit. That is the single one and only variable that allows you to lose body fat and lose weight over time. So you're absolutely right. In theory, you know, you have that. I think there's a guy, was it the Twinkie diet or something like that, that he went on? Again, I've not read this extensively. It doesn't really come up in the scientific journals very often. But, you know, you do have, like you say, these little weird case studies of some, like, was he a PT or something in America or something like that?
I think he was a lecturer or something like that.
Yeah, so, you know, whoever it was, and he literally had the correct amount of calories, but literally from Twinkies. And I think in America, Twinkies are like these little, are they chocolate bars or cake bars or something?
He was a nutrition professor.
Brilliant. So, you know, and the moral of the story is he had the correct amount of calories from the worst possible, like, construct of his diet through literally just eating these Twinkies and not much else. And he lost weight. And that was to prove a point that actually the quality of your diet for the purpose of weight loss doesn't make any difference whatsoever in principle. So
wouldn't say it's the most optimal approach, though.
No, without any shadow of a doubt, that is completely and utterly not an optimal approach. So in principle, yes, on paper, that's correct. But in reality, you know, he's probably going to feel hungry all the time having Twinkies because what he's going to eat it, that it's going to get digested in about 15, 20 minutes and his stomach's completely empty again. So if you think about the reality of having to go through that, you're so likely to overconsume because not only do they taste incredible, but at the same time, you know, it's so, like, devoid of any sort of nutrition whatsoever that you're going to feel hungry all the time. And by the way, your blood sugar levels are going to be going like this all day, up, down, up, down, up, down. Yeah. You're going to feel like absolute crap. It's as simple as that. So yes, in principle, that's true with weight management, but in practice, the actual living reality, we need to make sure that the micronutrients are taken care of because generally speaking, you know, weight management journeys last a long time. I put a post up that had a lot of interaction recently over the weekend, and it was just simply, I just put up, you know, you can't reverse 20 years worth of weight gain in 6 weeks. Please focus on, I think it was consistency and over a long period of time. You know, that's one of the biggest factors. So anybody that's got weight to lose, unless you're, like, you know, getting shredded for a competition, you've only got like a few kilograms or something to lose to, like, really bring out that six pack. Like, that's not what everybody's got right now. The main focus for a lot of people is, like, you know, to be, you know, it could be you know, you've brought up three kids and it's time to have like a bit of me time now, but during that period, you've not thought about yourself at all. You're maybe 4 stone overweight and it's time to start working on reversing that. That's not going to go in 6 weeks. So because it's therefore a longer period of time, if you're not getting your diet right, micronutrient wise, that's going to have some significant health impacts at some point. So, you know, we know that if you're not getting the right levels of calcium, for example, you know, the your ability to exercise and actually, you know, gain access to the energy that you consume is compromised. So, you know, your workouts are going to be more sluggish because maybe you're not having enough B vitamins, not enough calcium. You know, we know that these are going to have significant health impacts if, let's say, for example, over a 6 month period, you've not consumed enough calcium. You could have like lower bone density, for example, and it'd be at higher risk for osteoporosis and things like, you know, hairline fractures. You know, if you're like jumping around, throwing weights around and stuff like that, and you know, jumping up and down off of boxes and doing plyometrics, for example. Yeah, the bloody burpees. I absolutely hate that word. I feel so sorry for any client that's got to go through burpees. Hate them. But anyway,
burpees are a staple.
Yeah, you've got to focus on the stuff that you don't like doing, unfortunately, to get the best results. Yeah. So yeah, there is that too. But yeah, you know, so again, I'm only using like a basic example there and focusing on one micronutrient. But you know, it's so important. And by the way, the in my opinion, the micronutrient section, when you get that right, that's the section that makes you feel incredible day to day, because you know if we're getting the right levels of vitamin C, vitamin A, vitamin D, vitamin E, vitamin K, and like having really, really high quality fiber intake, so your digestive system's working really well. Because you've got high fiber intakes, the food takes a lot longer to digest. So therefore, if you're prolonging the amount of time it takes to digest, you're not going to be as hungry. You know, you're going to stay fuller for longer. So it's not, you know, it really does all interlink into weight loss. So my PhD research is within the area of plant-based diets. And what tends to happen is you can use a vegan diet, for example, as a prescription for certain health conditions. So it's nothing to do with weight loss, but for health conditions, you can prescribe a vegan diet and it helps people solve various different medical problems. Now, one of the byproducts of that is people tend to lose across the board a lot of weight when they go on to from an omnivorous, like normal standard diet, to a vegan diet and transition across to a vegan diet, for example. They lose a lot of weight, and it's not because veganism is some sort of bloody magical thing. You know, it's all explainable by science.
Yeah. Because me and the boys were talking yesterday, sorry to cut across you, Shane, about the pizza and chip vegans.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily going to help anybody health-wise.
No, you're absolutely right. And you know,
but it's more so to just keep the focus on the plant-based foods.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, again, you know, not for 1 minute would I advise that people completely, you shouldn't really be omitting any section of, you know, you just have a bit of everything, even treat foods. And if you, you know, how, whatever you want to call it, you know, if once a month you go to McDonald's with the kids and you have like a milkshake thing and all that sort of thing and chicken nuggets, there's nothing wrong with that at all. The problem is the frequency. Is that forming like 5% or less of your diet, then good to go. That's absolutely fine. If it's forming 50% of your diet, we've got serious problems, and that's going to lead to, you know, health problems. And just think, like, you have a budget to spend at all times on food. So like we said earlier, let's say 1500 calories. Every calorie that you spend on food and select like what you're eating, you can choose to spend that on nutrient dense foods or non-nutrient dense foods, like, for example, McDonald's. Generally, McDonald's is like I don't know if you feel this, but I was absolutely shocked. I had a double cheeseburger about 3 weeks ago. Like I go to McDonald's about three times a year or something like that, and this was one of my occasions that I went and I had a double cheeseburger, and it said on the wrapper it was something ridiculous, like 800 calories or something, or 700. And I'm thinking, wow, like, for a double cheeseburger, like I could have three of those.
Yeah,
because they're so small and not filling. Yeah. And I was like, that's staggering. Like, how can that be? But anyway, you know, and this shows, you know, there's foods that you know are easily accessible, and fast foods completely devoid of any nutrition. It's going to cause you problems. You're spending those calories on stuff that hasn't got any micronutrients attached to it, when you could have spent it on, I mean, 700 calories. Because I'm a little bit of a nutri wizard, like I could like cook up some soup, and like you could have a whole bucket of the soup to get to 700 calories. So there's so much more food, because the you know, nutrition energy density is much lower per gram. So you can have way more, and you know, you just think about the quality of your foods much more. It actually helps you a lot when it comes to weight management too. So the micronutrients are essential. It's not like you know, I don't really like fruit and veg. It's like, I'm sorry, but you can't not like fruit and veg. You can't.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you'll have health problems if you just don't have any. It's as simple as that, you know.
What I would say to people as well that struggle with eating their fruit and vegetables, and usually it's a vegetable issue, because fruit is quite tasty in itself. You see people way more common, they don't like vegetables than fruit. But I think the problem is, I think people were given, maybe when they were a child, they were given boiled broccoli, and all of a sudden they don't like broccoli. But it's like, if you take boiled broccoli, or you take, say, you know, pan roasted broccoli with a bit of garlic, bit of salt, bit of pepper, it's completely different dish. So what I would say to people is, before you discount vegetables altogether, maybe look at upgrading your cooking skills.
Yeah, well, 100%. You know, you can taste. Again, I don't know if we've ever had this discussion or I've ever opened up about this on a video like this, but I know I'm a nutritionist, right? And it's probably going to be really weird for me to say this, but there's so many vegetables and particularly different textures and things that I really don't like, because I, you know, I'm a human being. I've had an upbringing and I've had the exact that exact same thing. You know, mum saying you're not allowed to leave the bloody table until you've had your like 16 hours steamed, like, you know, I don't know, broccoli or whatever. And it's just like, you know, it induces like fear and like physical anxiety when you even think about having to eat that rubbish. Oh, it's disgusting. But what I'm saying is, now that I've sort of got into nutrition, you sort of a lot more, of course. But you know, this is the thing, especially when it comes to cooking. So if there's loads and loads of veg that I don't like, I figure out a way of saying, Shane, that's not good enough. You're going to have to figure out a way of you being okay with this and consuming them regularly. So for example, you know, when I have spaghetti bolognese, I'll like grate up a courgette. I hate courgette. I absolutely hate it. I really do. But you grate it up and it almost like it almost dissolves into the sauce. So, you know, you have spaghetti bolognese with grated courgette and grated carrots and things like that in that. And by the way, this is another good tip for you know, how to get the kids like eating a lot more fruit and veg and fiber a day without them even knowing. So I've got to treat myself like a kid, basically, and create all these things into sauces. And one of my favourite things is to make a curry. Curries are just absolutely brilliant for, you know, getting the micronutrients in there and the veg. You know, even just off the top of your head, you know, straight away you're going to have garlic in there, you're going to have onions, you're going to have, we like love spicy food, so we have probably a couple of chilies in there as well, chopped up. You know, we could have peppers in there. You could have like mange too and things, like if it's like a Thai curry, you know, there's so many different variables curry wise that you can, it's so easy to get like three of your five a day in one meal. And so that's one of the tricks that I use to like override my childish brain that doesn't like all these foods. I figure out a way of like shoehorning all these nutrient dense foods into my intakes, whether I like it or not. And it tastes incredible. Problem solved.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic, Shane. There's Brandon giving us a little love. Brandon, be kind of similar to yourself in terms of he wouldn't have been a huge vegetable eater, especially growing up as a kid. He kind of would have been a beans and chip kind of kid. But now, as he's growing up again, it's with a true an interest in cooking. You know, he cooks like a banging kind of spaghetti bolognese, and it's kind of like, yeah, just utilizing the flavors of the other foods maybe to mask the flavor of the things that you don't like. But it's really important to include them. Just on that. Just if anybody's watching, if you have any questions, guys, feel free to just leave a comment below. Myself and Shane, if you don't have time to get back in this, we'll get back to you later. What do you think about supplementation of, like, say for example, like a multivitamin? What is the research on that? Do you know?
Yeah, so that's a really good
bioavailability of the nutrients.
Yeah, definitely. So this is the thing, right? So we just need to. Again, it goes back to that annoying thing. It depends. You know, if you're somebody who is, you know, very, very much struggling to get a nutrient dense diet, and what I mean by that is plenty of fruit and veg, essentially, full of vitamins and minerals and fiber and things like that. You know, if you're starting at a low point, and you're the type of person that only has like, you know, mashed potatoes, meat, and then maybe you just don't eat the veg and that sort of thing. You know, if you're that type of person, you're in a situation where you're more likely to benefit from micronutrient supplementation. So, you know, if you have like multivitamins, that's not necessarily the worst thing in the world to advise, to be fair. And especially also when you're going through a weight management journey, what happens is, of course, you generally have a lower calorie intake than what you would if you weren't aiming to lose weight. Lower calories means you've got less of a budget to spend on nutrient-dense foods. So there's a direct correlation between basically the amount you reduce your calorie intakes and the likelihood of being micronutrient deficient. So, you know, if it stands to sense, if you're obviously don't do this, but let's say, for example, you're consuming 500 calories per day versus somebody that's consuming 3,000 calories per day. The person that's consuming 3,000 calories can easily spend loads of calories on lots of foods to access all those micronutrients. The guy that's consuming 500 calories, he might have one meal that day and maybe one snack and that's it. How's he going to get, or how is he, she, they going to get like their five a day from 500 calories? Yeah, or six or seven a day, you know, that's an absolute bare minimum we should be striving to achieve. So somebody that's, you know, if you're having lower calorie intakes and you're struggling to get your five a day in, micronutrient supplementation can actually be a really good thing. It's like the lesser of the two evils. But the best way forward is to make sure that we plan out our nutrition every single week and make sure that every single calorie we do spend, even though it is a bit more restricted because we're trying to lose weight, for example, every calorie we do spend needs to be spent on veg as a priority. So, the order of priority for me would be get your protein sorted first, because that's going to help you so much with recovery, with muscular growth, with feeling fuller for longer. Protein generally has a very high satiety index. It just means, you feel full and you also feel fuller for longer if you get the protein levels right.
It also has a high thermal effect of food. Meaning, so can be very helpful with weight loss. I think the study said up to 20% of the calories are used in digestion.
Up to 30. You're absolutely right. So, protein is very difficult to digest. Basically, it's not difficult. We can digest it. It's not a problem. But the process in which it needs to go through to become digested is different to something like if you had like a slice of bread, for example. It's very easy to just some digestive enzymes break that down very, very quickly, very easily, whereas proteins are a very different thing. So it takes a lot longer to digest. It needs to be processed more within your body throughout the digesting process. Therefore, a lot of the energy is released through heat, through that process of digestion. So if you're spending like 100 calories on protein, you may only be consuming 70 of those calories for every 100 calories is what we're trying to say. So it's very, very useful. So you get the protein right, you're going to feel fuller for longer. A good chunk of those protein calories are going to be flying off into Narnia somewhere else, like being used up as heat energy, during that digestion process. Then step two, every single meal, this is literally what I do, salt the protein first, get the protein levels right, and then get your five a day section in there straight away. Forget about carbs, forget about fats, you get your five a day into every single meal. So it doesn't matter what it is, even if it's just like, I don't want to have anything chefy or fancy, I'll have like a sandwich or something. Brilliant, can we get some grated carrot and grated courgette and things like that on there? Could we have some homemade salsa or something like that to spice it up a little bit? Can we have like a squeeze of lime? Could we have a little bit more sweet corn if it's like a tuna sweet corn sandwich? Could I chop jalapenos in it as well? It sounds a bit weird, but it is actually a really nice combination if you like spicy stuff. So I'll have like, so straight away I'm having quite a lot of my five a day, even though it's a sandwich. Whereas if you don't plan it and you don't think about the order of the importance of those nutritional areas, you'll end up just going and making a sandwich. There'll be no five a day in it. It'll just be tuna mayo or something because you've not thought about it. You're not. Do you get where I'm coming from? When it comes to micronutrients, it depends. It depends. If you're already having like six portions of fruit and veg per day, for example, seven, eight or something, you're just going to be basically creating expensive urine because your body consumes a certain amount and the better word would be utilizes a certain amount of the water soluble vitamins. So something like vitamin C, it only absorbs a certain amount and then you basically wee out the rest to put it in a non-glamorous way. But that is the reality. So you are literally creating expensive urine. It's pointless. You don't need it because you need to get your diet right first, and we use this as a to supplement if we need to. So some people may need to, some people may not need to. We just need to assess roughly the quality of your diet as it is to then decide whether it's going to be a good thing to supplement, because it's pointless if your diet's exactly tip top and where it needs to be already. So for that reason, it would be a no, don't have any supplements. Whereas the other guy that I was, used as an example earlier on, that's having like smiley faces and mashed potato and sausages every day, and there's nothing wrong with that, but there's no micronutrients in there. There's just nothing. Somebody like that would definitely benefit from it. Does that all make sense?
Yeah, no, very much. And just to put that in perspective for people, so when we talk about five a day, basically what you're looking for is we're talking about five portions of the day, and the best way to do it is say like a cup, a hand-sized portion. So like cup your hand, and that's kind of five hand-sized portions of vegetables is kind of what you're aiming for every day.
Yeah, without a doubt. And again, it's super annoying with nutrition because it's like that's a really good broad way to look at it, and that's probably correct 70 to 80% of the time. But there are other things like, you know, to have like your quota of chilies or something, you wouldn't have a handful of chilies to meet.
Yeah,
there's other stuff that doesn't fall into that. But at the same time, you know, generally speaking, I think it's 75 or 80 grams of whatever portion it is on the NHS website. So, you know, that would look like, you know, I don't know, 13 cherries or something, or one apple or one banana. Or whatever, you know, or like, but again, there's every now and again, there's like garlic and chili and things, and there's not really any consensus on that. I'll just count, if I have a chili, I'll just count that as one of my five a day, because it's incredibly nutrient dense anyway. So don't freak out about it. It's like, oh, but I only had like 79 grams. That doesn't count. Don't worry
and
about
just,
that.
Just keep going with that one, Shane. What would you recommend as your, say, like your top three or top five kind of most nutrient dense vegetables?
That's a really good question. So I think that if I'm just trying to figure out a way of how to use a scientific way of answering that. Probably, so I would take a look at firstly at this research been done on areas called, actually I put a post up about this in the group. There's areas in the world that are called blue zones, and they're generally places where, you know, their diet is ridiculously nutrient dense and ridiculously good, whatever that looks like in that part of the world. Therefore, as a result of that, and lots of other factors like their lifestyle and keeping fit and healthy well into elderly life,
and social,
you know, they live to, yeah, and other things like mental health and how they, the community they have, like people around them all the time to help with things. And so, you know, it's not just nutrition, definitely not, but nutrition is a big impact on that. And yet there's like area pockets of the world where there's much higher proportion of people that live to over 100 years old. So there's been research that's taken a look into that. And I actually did quite a lot of research into the Mediterranean diet. And that's one of the, you know, again, what is the best diet doesn't really exist. Like the best diet is whatever you're going to be best with and get the most nutrients out of that. That's pretty much it. Having said that, we do know that, you know, there's areas of the world that you think, how can you include wine every single day and that be a good diet? Like, how is that possible? The reality is that they grow, that it's like locally sourced wine that's produced not en masse, it's produced in a local way. So therefore, the antioxidant properties of that wine is actually very, very high, and it's like 3 or 4 times higher than the wine that we would get on like a shelf in Sainsbury's or something. Do you get what I mean? So even just like that. And by the way, we're not talking a bottle of wine a day here. That's going to have obviously adverse effects. Yeah, I'm talking a small glass of 1.25 mil. But they'll have that in, you know, as part of their, you know, with their spaghetti bolognese or something, or with their grilled fish or salmon or something like that or whatever. So one of the other areas is, you know, that it's high in fiber, very, very important fiber. It's also high in antioxidants as well, and also high in dietary nitrates, which, again, it's a bit, I'll not go into it too much because it is a bit boring, but basically when you have like higher nitrate content, we have a lot lower risk for cardiovascular disease and anything that's sort of linked within that area, it comes under the umbrella of cardiovascular risk. So what happens is, you know, that all that sort of plaque and things like that build up on inside your arteries can be negated to a certain extent by having a higher nitrate content within the diet. Also, when you have higher nitrates, you can actually exercise harder and for longer. So if you take a look at from a sports nutrition perspective, something like having concentrated beetroot juice or concentrated tart cherry juice, you know, there's extensive studies on cycling, for example, that have shown that if you constantly have this supplementation, like these little weird shots of beetroot basically, and it's really super concentrated beetroot, the reason or rationale behind that is because it's very high in dietary nitrates, very high. You consume that, and that actually creates more of a buffer basically for you to exercise harder and for longer versus somebody who doesn't have that. So it helps
it has a relation to how quickly your body buffers the lactic acid, is it?
Yeah, exactly. You're absolutely right. Yeah, those two things are absolutely intrinsically linked. So, and this is the thing, it's absolutely fascinating that nutrition can have that much sway and that much of a significant impact. So we're not talking like, you know, an apple a day keeps the doctors away, but you don't really feel any difference. if you get your nutrition right, you can literally have like 30% more strength. Like that's just by staying hydrated, for example. That's an astronomical figure. 1% increase would be great.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you're dehydrated, you can lose 30% of your power. It's exactly, staggering results. So the nutrition is intrinsically incredibly, you know, important for everything from health to physical performance, and of course to what generally people have as goals is like weight loss and feeling great. So, you know, we just need to really make sure that, so in answer to your question, sorry, I waffled on a little bit there, but you said, you know, what are your top foods, you know, most nutrient dense foods? I would say things that are included in those types of diets. So I'll give you an example. So in, I think it's Korea, but it's a country in Asia. It might be Japan, might be China. I'm sure it's Korea, where they make their own kimchi, I think it's called, and it's like fermented. It's like a fermented salad or something, or whatever you would call it, and it's like all grated
fermented cabbage, carrot. Maybe is it? Oh no, yeah, that's cabbage. That's sauerkraut. Sorry, I think that's sauerkraut. Is it? Or maybe it is.
So that's another version of it. I think it's in Germany or somewhere that they have sauerkraut.
Germany, I think that one, yeah.
I think it is. Yeah. But again, there's nothing wrong with that either. That's really nice as well. But the thing in what we're kimchi that I'm referring to, it's so like high in dietary nitrates that people have been doing that. You know, these recipes, they have like recipes handed down through generations and generations, and they just genuinely didn't realize how good quality nutrition that these recipes were. And they've been, you know, investigated, and one of the reasons why that they seem to be living longer and having better health is it's so high in dietary nitrates. So, you know, things like berries, things like green leafy vegetables, and again, so, you know, when you actually look at it, it's not too dissimilar to what we have access to. It's not as though they have a special thing. Like kimchi is a bit different because, you know, it does need to be sat in a big bucket and fermented for weeks and months and things. And I'm not saying have that, of course, and you can buy kimchi, by the way, as well. I've never had it, so I'm gonna have to probably take a look at that. But the ingredients that they use are like chilies, like cabbage, like, you know, it's the same
radishes.
We can just have and we can have these as part of a salad, for example. You don't have to complicate things.
One of our ladies in the gym, Sabrina McGuire, actually regularly brings in is it called kombucha? She brings kombucha into the gym she gives it members and stuff. Really, really good. So I think one of the key benefits as well is for digestive health, for gut health.
Yeah, definitely, exactly. So you know, in general, like fermented foods are definitely supportive of better gut health, definitely. But again, it just be really careful though on some supplements and things like that, in particular, because gut health is like, I'll give it, you know, just to put it into perspective, some people do their whole career, like 40 years worth of solid research on gut health, and one specific strand of bacteria that comes under that gut health. So it's an incredibly complicated area. You can't just go, oh, have kimchi once a day and that's your gut health sorted. It's like, it's not as simple as that. But at the same time, you don't have to look, you know, I don't expect everybody to research it and know, like, you know, off by heart, these million strands of bacteria that are in your gut right now as we speak. Actually, trillions. It's not millions, it's trillions.
Yeah.
So I don't for one minute expect everybody to rehearse that and know every strand and things like that, but you don't need to. Again, this is all covered when you get your nutrition planned out and stay consistent with it. So it might seem a bit repetitive sometimes. You know, I'll put posts in the group and say consistency is absolutely king. And then every Saturday or Sunday, we might put a post in like a topic about planning, for example. It's not me being like a boring, nagging mum or dad to say tidy your room or something. It is a genuinely, massively important thing for all these reasons. So we've spent all this time on this live stream now, and all of this, every last bit, from protein to nutrient density to weight loss to all of this and more, can be solved by you sectioning aside 20 minutes on a Sunday to plan out your next 7 days, like your next 168 hours. Like, that's a big worthwhile trade-off. That 20 minutes 100%. Can transform your whole week. All these good health, everything will be solved by doing that.
I was talking to the boys yesterday, and what we were saying was people who don't have a plan for their food, basically what they're doing is they're sending themselves out into the world and they allow their emotions to dictate what to eat. You know, if I'm happy, I eat this. If I'm sad, I eat this. If I'm celebrating, I'm eating this. If I'm hungry, I'm eating this. So kind of you're constantly being pulled in all these different directions because, again, we're humans. We're emotional beings. But just having a plan can just kind of guard you against kind of being so kind of wishy-washy with your nutrition.
Absolutely, 100%. And I've written about this extensively on numerous occasions, and it's absolutely right. There's two different ways that we can, you know, base our food decisions. There's goal-based decisions and emotion-based decisions. Like, I'm a little bit peckish now, so when we come off of this live stream, I'm going to go have some lunch. If I just go based on a rumbling stomach, of course I'm going to go around the corner and have a sausage, bacon and egg sandwich. Like, of course you are. Your stomach's rumbling. You think, oh, what's really tasty? I'm just going to go for that. Whereas I've already planned my nutrition out, so I know that we're going to go in and I'm going to have some grilled salmon with some, like sweet chili, lime and like sauce and things like that on it and some beautiful veg with it as well and some couscous. Like, fantastic. That I've planned that out. It's nothing to do with how I feel. It's how you feel is irrelevant to your goals. But if you don't plan, it's 100% relevant because that's the only method you're using to make your decisions, emotion-based ones. A rumbling stomach is not a comfortable thing to do. So, yes, of course you're going to order a pizza on a Friday night based on your stomach rumbling. Whereas if you plan it yourself, you can make your own pizza for a third of the calories, twice the amount of protein, twice the nutrition density, and it still tastes incredible. Yeah. And you've saved yourself 40 quid.
Exactly.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
You know, thanks so much, Shane. Cool, I feel like we should wrap it up here. I appreciate you taking the time to come on. Hopefully we can do it again in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, definitely. I think it'll be a really good thing to jump on, you know, at least every few weeks, and we'll just have a really good chat about different topics. And I think that, you know, it just allows another way of people to interact and have a chat, and you know we'll get more and more used to it, so that you know when people know that it's up and coming, and it's like, oh, I can nip on my dinner break or whatever and jump onto that live stream and ask a quick question, and maybe you could share what you're having for lunch today, and like we can sort of analyze it or something, or like you know, there's so much we can do. And I think if we do this a little bit more regular, I think you know it's going to help everybody a lot more, definitely.
Yeah, it was amazing. So, guys, if anybody has any questions that you maybe like us to cover in the next one, just leave them below. And as I said, we'll cover them in the next video, but we'll also get back to you during the week with some answers. Again, the key thing to take away from this is, again, just have a plan, be consistent, be patient, don't overcomplicate it. You know, calories number one, protein number two, start there, and then everything else is the icing on the cake after that.
Yeah, just to get that third point in, just to get that five a day, the nutrition density after that. So, yeah, 100%. Sure. No matter what you do, the calories have to be where they need to be for you to get your result. After that protein, after that five a day, and then whatever you've got remaining after you've ticked those three boxes, you can pretty much have whatever you want carbohydrates and fat-wise. It doesn't make any statistical difference from the, you know, there's actually been research on that topic as well. Is it like a high-carb diet more effective than a high fat diet and things like that, and it just makes no difference whatsoever, basically, providing you get the calories, protein and five a day correct first. Doesn't matter what happens after that. So those three things, definitely focus on those, and then as you quite rightly said, everything takes care of itself from that point onwards.
Excellent, Shane. Well, thanks a million for coming on, and thanks everybody who was watching, and we'll see you in the next one.
Brilliant. Happy day. It's been an absolute pleasure. And of course, like, anybody needs anything at all, just tag me in a post in the group. I'm only a message away. And obviously, you know, you don't have to be on the live stream. You can literally speak to me anytime, any day as well. So hopefully you found it valuable, and we'll look forward to the next one.
Appreciate it, Shane. Have a great week.
You're very welcome. Take care, buddy.